Right. Yes. So let me try to make a recording with sound this time. Hello everyone, and we've come to week number 3. I made some updates which are important. All the lab exercises and review questions and problems are now updated for the first 6 weeks. So I'm almost done with the rest as well. For the lab exercises, you will see that many times you would like to copy and paste. And that's the purpose. Feel free. Copy and paste. But copy and pasting from the PDF is sometimes a bit tricky. Especially the different kinds of hyphens and quotes, fnutter, are problematic. So this is the source file for the lab document from Linux. And then, since you probably know that on Linux or on Unix, line break is just the line, no, it's carriage return, while on Windows the line break is carriage return line feed. So sometimes when you open this file on Windows, you get just one continuous big line, and that's annoying. So I made the with the Windows line breaks version. So if you open the file on Windows, then open this file and copy and paste from that. We are now in week 36. And we're going to start to look at Puppet. And that's our goal for the next 4 weeks. It might be that we add another week. It depends a little bit on how you're doing. If you think that this is too much to do and you don't have time to do the labs, because there's quite a bit of work we're going to do these 4 weeks, I can delay moving on for a week here. Our goal is similar to, so our goal is that you should be quite comfortable with state-of-the-art best practice system administration. That means when we visited Mnemonic, let's see, that was not with you guys. When we went to Oslo last year, it was Base Farm and Marcelo. The year before, we visited Mnemonic with the group who have graduated now. And when we talked to the system administrator of Mnemonic, one of the system administrators, he said that they have a large number of Linux servers, of course, and he said that they're that's not much of a challenge to administrate, because all of them, we just give them a pup drone and they take care of themselves. And that's where we're heading. So administrating a server should just be assigning it a role, and it should do the job. I hope you have read enough in the textbook now to see that what he's trying to tell us in almost every chapter is never log into a server. You never log into a server and make a change, especially a server in production. You need to log into a server and do stuff, because you have to, if you're going to install a new system, you of course have to learn it yourself. And you install something and do stuff manually to learn the system. But as soon as you've learned the system, you move on to writing code about the system and writing a new role for the server that's going to install this system. We never do manual installations other than for our own purpose of learning systems. So, Puppet. Is one language and configuration management system. There's also, it's similar to the Norwegian system, CF Engine. CF Engine was the first real configuration management system with its own language, and sort of did some of this most innovative stuff. And it's still a really good system. And Puppet is pretty much based on the same principles as CF Engine. So Puppet was started also by a CF Engine user who wanted to take a slightly different approach. Just to say a little bit about that, CF Engine is written in C. So CF Engine's big strength is that it's fast. Puppet is slow. Puppet is written in Ruby, some parts of Puppet are written in Ruby, some are written in Java, but Puppet, they were able to make a model with more flexibility when it comes to reuse and helping each other, more easier to write modules and contributing code, and I think that's the reason why Puppet has now become a little bit more popular. But CF Engine is still running, but I would particularly consider choosing CF Engine today if you need a configuration management system that is more lightweight and faster. Especially if you're involved in these Internet of Things projects where you have smaller computing devices with not much power and you need to configure them, I would probably look towards CF Engine. Invented by a really smart guy called Mark Burgess, who used to be a professor at Oslo University College. He was that until 2008, when he started CF Engine as a commercial company, worked full-time with CF Engine for quite some time. There are other systems. There's also a popular system called Chef. And there are others as well. But I'm quite sure that the most widely used system and the one you will run into is Puppet. So that's why we've chosen to use Puppet in this course. But what you learn in Puppet, it's very easy to transfer to CF Engine or to Chef. And if you're on Windows, what do you use on Windows? What's the parallel on Windows? Probably mentioned this in the operating system course sometime, but on Windows you now have the final part of the PowerShell saga, PowerShell DSC, PowerShell Desired State Configuration, and that's idempotent PowerShell. And the funny thing is that you can very easily map between these systems. You can use now PowerShell to not only manage Windows, but you can use a infrastructure based on PowerShell to manage Linux servers as well. And you can use Puppet to manage Windows servers. I had a previous student who I met last year, who told me that Eric, I finally started using Puppet. And the funny thing, I only use it on Windows. Because he works in the IT administration of one of the big counties in Norway. And he got the task of, you probably know this, preparing a couple of thousand laptops for use in high school. Because high school pupils, they will be able to rent a laptop for while the 3 years they are in high school. And he got the charge of preparing them. And he chose to, of course, then you prepare an image to deploy on these laptops and you do most of the configuration in these images. But he wanted to do some configuration after the image was applied, and he needed some way to have these laptops to have updates during the 3 year period. And he chose to use Puppet for that. So use Puppet in as a Windows only environment and works very well. We will get back to desired state configuration at the end of the course. But the funny thing is that there is a Puppet module that maps all Puppet, or that maps all desired state configuration elements into Puppet. So if you want to manage a Windows server using desired state configuration, but your infrastructure is Puppet, you can use Puppet's DSC module, and then you can address everything you can do, almost everything you can do with PowerShell desired state configuration with Puppet code by just abbreviating the Puppet code with DSC underscore. So, yeah. There are several nice things like that you can do. Okay, so this is where we're heading. And the first thing we need to do. So these 4 weeks, I have designed, I tried to do this in a pedagogical good way, with first just focusing on the language. So the first thing we have to do is learn the language of Puppet and be comfortable with the language, the basic elements. Then we move on to the concept of modules. So these first 2 weeks, don't worry about networks of servers. We just need one server, work locally, and be comfortable with Puppet. First the basic language, then how to write modules. That's next week. Then we move into using Puppet in a network setup where you have a Puppet master and you have Puppet agents. Then we spend 1 week on setting this up and learning how this communication works. So this is how you use Puppet in practice. Then, when we know how to do this in practice, then we apply what is actually best practice. What is a server role? And we implement server roles in Puppet. So this is where we introduce the real setup. And this is where we professionalize the setup. And what I hope to do, I say I hope to do, because this is what I plan to develop now as a new feature in this course, is to finalize the professional setup with doing continuous integration and continuous delivery. So hopefully when we're here, we can also complete this with proper continuous integration, meaning whenever we change our Puppet code, we can just ship it to a Jenkins server that runs a set of automated tests before we move things into production. So that's my personal goal for the next 2 weeks is that I have to learn Jenkins and try to create a good good lab exercise for you here, so we can also complete this continuous integration setup. So all the material you need now until week 39 are in these documents. Yep. Next Tuesday, September 12th, I'm not here, but then Lars-Erik and Eigil will be in the lab, and they know at least as much about Puppet modules as I do, so they should be able to help you with anything with Puppet. I teach Puppet, they work professionally with Puppet almost every day, so that should be a very good replacement while I travel to Trondheim. In 2 weeks, on 18th of September, Ernst & Young is coming here to give a presentation about the company and to arrange a capture the flag competition for you in the evening. And I hope that you're interested in participating in that. And I told them that they could use the second hour of our lecture on Monday. So on Monday 18th, I will lecture for the first hour, and then Ernst & Young will have the second hour to present their company and their activities. I think all of them who are coming from Ernst & Young are previous students from Gjøvik. So that will be a presentation between 12 and 1 probably, and they will have a capture the flag competition probably in A255 between 6 and 9 in the evening. This will be announced one of the coming days from login. Yes. Demo. Demo. So for this week and next week, you just need some Linux server. I think in the lab exercise, I have said that you should start a server by modifying the heat template from last week. You don't have to. You can use the template you made last week. You just need some Linux server you can reach, and you can, of course, create this manually as well, but now that you know Heat and you need to create a Linux server, assign it to you need a network, you need a router, you need a floating IP, and if you have a Heat template that does all that for you, just get used to the habit of when I need something, I think, launch it with Heat. Launch it with your infrastructure definition tool. So when you have some kind of Linux server, you can do apt-get install puppet. Let's see if I have. Puppet is currently out in version 5. If you just have an Ubuntu 16.04 and you do apt-get install puppet, I think you still will get Puppet version 3. And then there was Puppet version 4, which is what we will be using in the course. And Puppet just came out in version 5. It doesn't make much difference, but there was quite some changes between Puppet version 3 and Puppet version 4. Nothing breaking. It's just that you might see that you want to use some features that were introduced in Puppet version 4. But it's backwards compatible, almost 100%, I think. So there are mostly no changes to the language. So for all the basic stuff you want to do, you can use any version. Puppet version 5 is out, but we are going to use a system called Foreman in 2 weeks, and Foreman does not yet support Puppet version 5. It will support Puppet version 5 in version 1.16, which I suspect will come out sometime during the next 2 weeks, but I don't have time to test and check everything, and there's no point in being absolutely on the latest possible system unless you're eager with contributing to finding bugs. So there's no real point in using Puppet 5. And the change from Puppet version 4 to 5 was not a really big change. The bigger change was between 3 and 4. Okay, so if you just do apt-get install, you will probably get Puppet version 3. But you'll see that in if you see the Puppet web pages, you will see how you can install version 4, and we'll do that many times later. But anyway, so I have Puppet here. With Puppet version 4, you will see that it's installed in /opt Puppet Labs. Yes, hello world. Let's start with hello world. In Puppet, you write a Puppet manifest. That's the app file with Puppet code. So if usually we call them .pp, but as you know, on Linux, file extensions doesn't mean anything. It's just something we use for readability. So hello.pp. And if I first have to state to which host should this apply. So when I write some Puppet script that I'm just going to execute locally, we need to have a node statement, and I say node default, like this. And now I can write code in here. And if I just want to output something, there's a Puppet resource called notify. Like this. And if I just want to apply this, I say Puppet apply. And I have an error in my code. So this is supposed to be colon. and it runs and executes hello world. So the core of Puppet is writing all these statements. This is a notify statement. This is a notify resource. But usually you don't do that. Usually you use Puppet for configuring systems, meaning creating files, setting permissions on files and the contents of files. If it's making sure that a service is running, you have a real problem sometimes if your SSH server dies. So, but if Puppet runs and makes sure that SSH service always is running, that can save you. So you want to make sure certain processes are running, you want to make sure certain users exist, you want to make sure certain packages are installed, etc. So here I would, on this host, I'm not going to say hello world. What I would normally do is I want to make sure that the user called Eric H is here, exists, and I want to make sure that of course I want some software installed, which is not installed by default. So I can also say here, I can use a list. I want to make sure that I have Vim, Nano, and Emacs. And I want to make sure that not only that they're present, but I want that every time Puppet runs, I want them to update if there's a newer version. So I can say present, but if I want also this to be updated whenever there's something new, I can say latest. Like this. Etc. So that's idempotent code. I'm not writing how to do it. This is declarative programming. This is the state I want to reach. I just describe what the system should be like, and I tell Puppet, make it so. Let it happen. That's where we're heading and what we want to do. And never underestimate the power of having your code idempotent. I got bitten by this actually this morning, because one of the boot scripts, startup scripts that we're going to use for Windows and Linux later is, say, this we'll get back to this later, but this is what we typically do when you launch a server. You just want it to start, maybe do some DNS configuration and join the Puppet network and get a role. That's what you want to do. So when you launch a server, I usually feed it this boot script. And the first thing it does is to install Puppet. I download a Debian package, which is not Puppet itself, but it's a Debian package for configuring the repository for Puppet. So I install this here, and I do an apt-get update, and an apt-get install Puppet agent. That's the first thing I want to do with any server I launch. And this morning I launched several servers, and one of them did not show up on my Puppet Master. And I looked at the logs of the server, and it turned out that this line caused puppet agent not found. One server couldn't find the puppet agent package. And the cause was that this code, of course, is not idempotent. This is regular imperative commands. So if one command fails, then my entire script breaks. Can you guess which of the above commands failed? Veget could fail. It's not necessarily that this downloading something from the internet, there are several reasons that this can fail. I tried to, this here is just a random generated file name, just so you know, there's nothing. Whenever you use a static file name, be very careful so you don't overwrite something. So this is just some random file name. This could have failed, but actually this failed. When can a package installation fail? Can you install multiple packages at the same time? Maybe. But usually there's a package database, and there's a package registry, which only one process can write to at a time. And when I was installing this or running this script, there was probably at exactly that time, there was some automatic updating mechanism already happening. So there was a process that was updating the package cache already. And then I'm not allowed to install this, so this failed, and then the repository was not added, etc. So, commands fail. So it's important that we can just run these again and again and again in case they fail. So if I run this script again now, you see that I run something and add something to a file. If I run this again, then this would be added another time. I would have multiple entries in my files, etc. So you don't want more imperative code like this than absolutely necessary. It's much better if you can use idempotent puppet code. So there are two ways of using Puppet. I showed you Puppet apply, which is what you do when you have a script and you just want to apply it once. It can also be that you choose to have a whole bunch of servers and all your servers just run Puppet apply every half hour scheduled from Kron or something. And your configuration you distribute with some other mechanism than Puppet. Maybe you have a shared file server, which so you always have mapped a directory from a shared file server. That's where you update your configuration. And then you have Puppet running every half hour from Kron. That's one. That's what the textbook calls masterless server configuration. Maybe you don't want to have one Puppet master controlling everything. You want to control your configuration by other means. That's one possible model as well. But usually you use Puppet. So you start a Puppet master, and all your servers run as Puppet agents, contacting the master, downloading their configuration if there are changes, usually every half hour. But now for learning Puppet, we're mostly just going to use Puppet apply. On a single server. Okay, so you have to learn the language of Puppet and all the stuff you can configure. That might sound like a nightmare, but trust me, it's not. It's quite easy, and it's you can look up basically anything you need, and you can use the old what many of us always have called the old Knoppix tricks. Has anyone heard of Knoppix? Yeah. So in the old days when we installed Linux, getting X window system, getting a graphical user interface working, was a nightmare. Because hardware support for desktop computers on Linux, and especially for configuring all kinds of graphics cards, was really not that good back in the late 90s, early 2000. And then suddenly, a live CD distribution called Knoppix appeared. And it always worked. So the trick was to, if I have problems configuring my monitor, I booted my computer with Knoppix, and I stole the configuration file that Knoppix generated and reused that when I did my installation. So, you know, reuse code from others or code that's automatically generated. So, the same thing you can do with Puppet. If you want to configure a user and you think, what kind of, I know it's user data, and then a bunch of options. Which options should I include? So what you can do is ask Puppet to describe resources on your system that already exists. So if I want to, let's see here, if I want to, I'm Eric HJE on this system. How can Puppet describe me as a user? Just say Puppet resource, and then the name of the resource type, which is user, package, file, kron for a kron entry, and then the name. So if I say Puppet resource user and my username, you have the Puppet code for defining me. Okay. What about if I want the Puppet code for installing Vim? It suggests this. So I can say ensure present, I can say ensure latest, or if I want exactly this kind of version of Vim that's installed on this server, Puppet tries to be as specific as possible when we ask Puppet with this query, so you can use this. So this is very helpful for when we're going to write code. Use this to help generate code. So this is our journey. We know that on computers, we install an operating system, and there's a bunch of platform-specific resources. You know, users on Windows and Linux are different. On Windows, we have access control lists. On Linux, we can have access control lists. We know that on Windows, we can install packages that are MSI packages or Chocolate packages. On Ubuntu, we use apt. On Red Hat-based installations, we use Yum. You know, there's all these platform-specific resources. And it's not just between Windows and Linux, between many things vary between different versions of Linux. And you might end up with different versions of Unix in general. Maybe you're managing OpenBSD systems and other kinds of Unix systems. So you have all these platform-specific low-level resources, which is what you want to control. This is what we want to configure. And what Puppet does is that it wants to abstract away these differences into one language where there's no difference between platforms. So that's the first goal of Puppet, that we have this, I can say user, and Puppet know how to create a user on Windows, and Puppet knows how to create a user on Ubuntu and on Red Hat. So Puppet has all these basic resources, groups, files, packages, etc. But if you want to describe everything you want to do with just these basic resources, this gets quite complicated. So what we want to do is that we want to group resources into dedicated tasks. If you want to demonstrate that you have learned, sort of reached the ultimate goal of this course, it's if you, by the end of this course, end up authoring a module that is published on the Puppet Forge. That would be then... you make my heart warm, or what do you ever say? Puppet modules is what you basically end up writing, and we help each other by writing Puppet modules and sharing them. And the Puppet Forge is where you can share modules. Right now there are 5,100 modules on the Puppet Forge. I'm going to show you more about this next week, where the topic is modules. But let's say you want to install an intrusion detection system. And a widely used intrusion detection system is Suricata. That's what we use internally at NTNU as well. And you have a bunch of servers configured with Puppet, and you want to install Suricata. And that means doing all bunch, whole bunch of small steps. Packages, users, files, etc. But, of course, many people do this. So what you do is you just download the Suricata module, and you just define, apply this Suricata install based on this module. And everything is done for you. And if you go to the Puppet Forge, you might recognize these names. Bendik and Odin, they took this course last year. And they wrote this module and published it on the Puppet Forge. And it's been downloaded 1,500 times. So you have these modules, but you want even to have a higher level. So you want a host should be have an intrusion detection agent. It should have a basic configuration, and it should be a web server, or it should have one specific role as a front-end proxy or something. Maybe you have three main tasks that a server should do. Then you write three profiles. And then, finally, you combine these profiles into one role. So each server should have one and only one role. So maybe this role is web server, mail server, DNS server, whatever you prefer. But this is the hierarchy. A server should have one and only one role. A role consists of profiles. A profile is usually based on modules. Modules are a collection of Puppet resources, and Puppet abstract away all the platform specific differences. Okay, let's break for 15 minutes and then we'll start the look at the lab exercise. For me to start developing material on teaching you how the language of Puppet and the basic principles of Puppet work. Normally, I as a teacher should do that. But again, there's no point in me doing that when Puppet Labs already has made a very, very nice interactive pedagogical way of learning the basics of Puppet. So they have a dedicated learning virtual machine, which is in a tutorial style, gamified, and it's very step by step, and that's how I learned the language of Puppet. So and hopefully you will enjoy learning that way as well. So that's what the lab exercise for this week is. It's for you to basically play your way through the Puppet Learning VM. So is it the lab exercise? It's just this one page. Launch the Puppet Learning VM, Puppet Learning VM 20 something in Sky High. You will find it in Glance. Glance is the image repository in OpenStack, the component that has all the images or the server templates. That's Glance. So we used to have to write a Glance command, but since everything now is unified over under the OpenStack command, Glance is not visible anymore. So I can say OpenStack image list. See that here? Puppet Learning VM. And so we need to launch that. And I just told you that everything you do from now on, you should start with Heat. But not today. This just launched this with the commands you learned in the first week. By the way, I think I said something wrong to you in the previous hour. Just to clarify, you probably understood what I meant, but when I told you about idempotent, I might have said that this was an example of not being idempotent. Actually, that command is idempotent. But what I didn't emphasize for you is that my script is not idempotent. So if I run this boot script multiple times, I will not reach a good state. I will get multiple entries in my files, etc. This command by itself, you can run again and again. It will fail. This failed once for me. But you will never get two entries in your package repository with this command. So this command actually is idempotent. But what I meant to show you and demonstrate to you is that when I count on this script running, if I count on this script running, it has to be successful the first time. Because if I run it twice, then it will make all these extra entries and things will start failing. So the script is not idempotent, but this command that failed, this command actually is idempotent, the dpkg command. So, I want to launch this. We start the server with OpenStack server create and with the image like this. And feel free to do this together if you want to. If not, you can watch the video. The exercise says choose a flavor with two virtual CPUs. I see I have an error here already. What an L. Also remember tab completion. Tab completion is not just a convenience so I write faster. Tab completion helps us avoid errors. So if I had used tab completion here, I would have caught this error. So I think it's flavor. And a flavor with at least two CPUs. If I run this now, this will just like this. OpenStack flavor list. If I want two CPUs, I need to use M1 medium. So I should use M1 medium. And okay, what was the next in the lab exercise? I have to say which network to connect to. So this image, this flavor, and then I need the universally unique identifier of a network. If I run this, this will fail. If I say OpenStack network list. If you have your heat stack from last week, you can just connect to that network. If you try to create the server directly in the public network, you will get an error. You're not allowed to create a port here. So I have this network I can connect to. So let me use that. And now for this, I don't think I can use my key, but it doesn't hurt anyway. And then I just give it the name. Let me call this learn. And if I want to reach this server, now it started building. If I want to reach this server, what is the next thing I have to do? If I now see OpenStack server list, which servers do I have? So my server learn is active. What's it missing? If you look at what does this server not have that my other servers have?
Floating IP.
Floating IP, exactly. So how do we assign a floating IP? OpenStack floating IP create. If I create a floating IP, I get this floating IP. And I can assign that with OpenStack server add floating IP and the name of the instance and the floating IP P. So if I associate this with learn and the floating IP here, then yep, my server has this floating IP. And do everything you're asked to do in the chapters of the quest guides. To access the quest guide and get started, enter the learning VM's IP address in your browser's address bar. Remember to assign a floating IP and use Foxy Proxy. So I need to access the web interface of this server. Now comes to the part where which I have not prepared, so let's hope that this works. See, what's the other one? So I have to do dynamic port forwarding like this. I've now said that port 3000 on my laptop will forward through my SSH account to internal on the network inside Sky High. So if I now launch a web browser and I make sure I use Foxy Proxy, I should now be able to access HTTP was 20, wasn't it? So there's the quest guide. And if I do HTTPS, you get to the console login of Puppet Enterprise. So Puppet, you have an open source Puppet and you have a Puppet Enterprise. The system is basically the same, but this is very common for big open source system. Is that they have usually a commercial enterprise version which you have to pay for. Then you get access to all the fancy graphical visualizations, etc. But for us, that doesn't matter. The functionality and the core engine is exactly the same. But here we also get a chance to look at Puppet Enterprise. You can log into the learning VM with SSH as root, but you need to access the console in Horizon to see the password on the splash page. Okay, so in Sky High, if I go to the virtual machine in Sky High, and I look at the console. Click here to show only console. So this is important. This is where you find the password you need. You see that I can log in now with this username root and this password here. You will probably get a different one. But don't log in here. Working through the console in Sky High is no good. Use SSH. So I know that my floating IP is here. So let me SSH as root at this. And
password. Why doesn't this work? Excellent! The classical missing security group error. I think it's... hopefully it's that. So I have my security group, and to see, if I do add security group to learn and Linux like this, first the instance name and then the name of the security group. Maybe now. Yep. What's this? Someone might be eavesdropping. No, it's just that whenever you reuse a floating IP, so SSH knows that the last time I connected to this IP address, that IP address represented a different host. So you will see that you get this quite often. And as long as you know that that's what's happening, you just run this command to delete the key, and then we try again. And I'm logged in to the learning VM. You see that we're now on a quest, the welcome quest, and my progress is 0 of 2 tasks. You can now either choose to follow this here. It's about the learning VM. Welcome. Getting started. Then read the text and do run the commands that are in the gray boxes. Ready to get started? Run the following command to begin the welcome quest. Quest begin welcome. You have started the welcome quest. So the first one is just to get acquainted with the quest tool. And then you can move on and you start to read the basics of Puppet and you learn about Puppet. So, unfortunately, or it really doesn't matter, but once again, they have rearranged the chapters a little bit from 2 months ago when I looked through this. So I discovered that now that you see that in the exercise, I've said that do everything you're asked to do specifically in these chapters. Well, these chapters don't exist anymore. They're just rearranged. But you see, manifests and classes, that's still there. Manifests and classes, resources, that's probably somewhere under... No, that's here, as part of Hello Puppet. Yeah. Basically, read through and do most of this. When it comes to really advanced stuff, the application orchestrator, I don't think... Defined resource types and application orchestrator, you don't have to do. So manifests and classes, package, file and service, resources, variables and templates, class parameters, facts, conditional statements, the forge. The forge and rules, and we will get back to this later. You can read them now, but you don't. We will talk more about this later. Defined resource types, an application orchestrator. You don't have to. We're not going to cover them. Feel free to read it, of course, but that's not important now. Also, if you don't want to read the web page here on the Learning VM, all this content is of course also available on the web. But I think that this the link I have here is wrong. Yep. But I'll update that. But the link on the web page is correct. So if you go on the in Blackboard and you click quest guide here, because I updated this morning, I forgot that I also had this link in the lab document. You see here is welcome, hello Puppet, agent run, etc. So this is exactly the same as on the Learning VM. So you don't need to use, you don't have to browse and use Foxy Proxy and all these things. You can just browse this web page and log in by SSH. See, it quickly gets to the node statement. And here's the hello world. And everything is very, very neatly explained. Also, this gives you the benefit of the same thing as with the Cisco Academy, that you will now learn Puppet in the same way as the rest of the world learns Puppet. Most people who learn Puppet are system administrators who go for a couple of weeks to take a Puppet course. And when they do the first Puppet course, what Puppet Labs do is they use the Learning VM. So you learn it in the same manner as if you were to pay a bunch of money to attend a Puppet course. Any questions? Okay, then I wish you all the best on your Puppet quest. And I'll be in A146 4 hours tomorrow and help you with anything you want. Yes.